I don't think there's this kind of crisis at Munster.
Yeah.
I just think Munster fans are still adapting to the fact that they're just nowhere near as good as Leinster. And I think it's very hard to a pill to swallow when you've come from the team of the noughties.
Joe presents House of Rugby, United Rugby Championship, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.
Hello and welcome back to House of Rugby. It is the final show of this season and we have got a full house today. We've got Mr. Greg O'Shea.
Hey Jason, how are you?
Good, good.
Yeah.
We've got Lindsay Pete.
Good morning. Afternoon.
Good evening. And the man himself, Ulster's most capped player, Mr. Darren Cave.
What's so funny about that, Greg?
Are you Ulster's most capped player?
Do your research.
Mayor, guilty. Actually? Joint tie. Do you get an honourable mention for Andrew Trimble? Yes, I am.
Congratulations. That's pretty cool.
I wondered why I wasn't really getting any respect for you over the past season.
I didn't know that, man.
You don't remember me playing.
Jeez, how have we gone the full season without me knowing that?
How have we gone the full season without me bringing that up?
Wow.
Darren, I believe you were over in South Africa for the last couple of weeks. What was supposed to be a short trip, but a certain team in blue kind of extended your stay.
Yes, we were all very disappointed, weren't we, when the Bulls turned over Leinster. None more so than my wife, who got a phone call afterwards to say, can I stay in South Africa for an extra week if Ulster lose? So yes, it was a busy time. It was a great experience. Great to be over there. And I'm still married, I think, just about.
10 days in Cape Town. What'd you get up to besides watching rugby?
Working, of course. Hold on, I don't think my wife listens to this podcast, but to tell the truth, it went quite quickly. There's a lot of people over there.
It's a cool city, isn't it? The culture there is amazing.
So I'd actually never been, because it was the lesser teams that were in the league when I was playing, based out of elsewhere. And yeah, it was a good place to be based. I was in the same hotel as Ulster, which was great crack after the game because the boys were a bundle of joy, as you can imagine. But Lindsay and I actually chatting. It's funny, that's the first time because of COVID I've been so close to the group. Physically close, and it felt really, really weird. Players had spoken to me before about like being in the group and then being an outsider, and like they didn't make me feel like an outsider. They were all very, but I felt really like, even walking, I didn't know how long a conversation should last, because I didn't know were they on the way to a meeting or just, and I was by myself. Feels weird, doesn't it?
Yeah, because you're used to this schedule and being somewhere and you're being told what to dress, and now you're like, am I even, do I go there anymore? I'm not meant to be here. Did you get any dance tips after the DHL, the Stormers dancers?
Would loved a few, because that was unbelievable. I think we're going to talk about it later in the show.
It's classic.
As a whole, I think one thing, and listen, the weather makes like 90% of the difference, but as a whole, like they have it right in South Africa with regards like making a, you know, a product. And in Ireland, we're very lucky, and it's very traditional, and swaff and suftum and all these kinds of things. But we grew up believing like the way to watch rugby was on the terrace, like sideways rain. Like, it's just not.
Knowing all your anthems and your songs and everything that associated with your team,
So as a product, like, it was unbelievable. Actually, the best, I'd say it's the best like rugby game as a spectacle I've ever been to, both those games.
Wow, that's a big statement.
That is a big statement.
Yeah, because I play a lot of big games, Greg, and we were just there. But it was unbelievable on that front.
That's interesting. If the final had been in RDS, it wouldn't have been anywhere near that spectacle you experienced in Cape Town.
No, nothing like it. Or Belfast, and it was nearly, it looked like it was maybe heading there at one stage. And do you know what? Like the South Africans, like, I mean, you guys were chatting about the feedback on the show even. Hello, South Africa.
They love the URC.
Yeah, but do you know what? Like, it's great. And I think that'll continue to grow. I think the players are still coming to like learning the teams and what countries they're from and what players are associated, but I think that will grow with the Wales being down there this summer. And how good is it for the competition?
So good.
It's just amazing. Class.
But do you think, because obviously they love the rugby in South Africa, like because it's their number one sport, they've developed that product, or do you think it's something that could be here? Because I think it's kind of gone that way with a lot of the media, like rugby here has grown, but obviously it has to compete with so much more on a very small island. So do you know what I mean? Will we ever get there with that product? With it?
I don't know, because I do, like, it is a boring answer, but like the weather makes a huge difference. When I was playing, I would have said, oh, it's all very well saying play in the summer. But when I was a player, I wouldn't have wanted to do pre-season in the winter.
Yeah.
Whereas now, as like a fan, I would say get it in the summer. Even just, I don't know if you noticed, but in the quarterfinal, Munster got an absolute seeing to in Belfast. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, remember
but
that.
Even see that, just like playing rugby in June over here, it just makes so much sense. And even the logic of like the Northern Hemisphere teams at the minute go under the Southern Hemisphere and then in November, vice versa.
Yeah.
Do you know, I just think as a product, the weather makes it. People are, you know, are in T-shirts. They're not all as well dressed as me and you, Jason. But
you're not factored in there the fact that it's the end of June now at the moment and it's been absolutely lashing rain for the last
week. It's absolutely baltic.
So it doesn't really give but summer honestly, doesn't even guarantee us sun over here anyway. So
yeah, I just think like, you know, like the climate in Ireland is never going to be great. We can't fix that. Although with a few international politicians are doing their best with global warming. Yep, that's a conversation for another day. Yeah, I don't know. And I do think that'll be the next thing for the South African players, actually, because at the minute they just play.
Well, you need a global calendar, like across the board. Like, that's it's a huge problem in rugby for a number of years, like, because everything's just all over the place and players are playing long seasons and they're playing here and they're there. Even for the South Africans, as we mentioned last week, it's been such a difference for them not having to get on a bloody 12-hour flight and get into a different time zone and play. Like, they could go down and lose to a New Zealand franchise. They're all jet-lagged.
Yeah.
Like, everyone here knows like to be jet-lagged. It's horrible.
Yeah.
It is horrible. Imagine playing a match then against the Crusaders or the Blues.
That was interesting. CJ Sander, who's on with me, and he said, like, just such an obvious thing to think of, but he's just saying, as a fan, it's just so much easier to follow because it's not on in the middle of the night.
Yeah. It's on at 6 in the evening, at 6 in the morning.
As a player, it's not like it's not that bad because the time zone's the same, you know? So, okay, you fly overnight, so you try and get as much sleep in the plane, then you get up and get on with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is nice.
Well, what do we think, like, overall? Like, I know we're looking at the South African teams here, but, like, the URC as a whole, it's our first season now. I know the Irish teams didn't win it, like, but, like, is it an improvement?
Oh, I think so. And I know we've given them a lot of credit, but the just the South Africans, what they brought, the product, the character, the feedback. And like we said, again, it's only going to improve the Irish teams. It's up now to the Scottish and the Welsh without being too harsh on them to kind of up their game now and look at it. And if they could come in and row in and improve the standard of their rugby, think of the league we could have if you'd just a standard, you know, blueprint, it'd be absolutely, I think, good.
Do you make it for Greg?
I thought it was a great season. Obviously, it started a bit slow, but then I think they've really gone to put a bit of money into the URC. And as Darren was saying, the South African team's winning has just kind of re-energised the whole thing. And it's no offence to Lindsay or the Leinster fans, but it's good to see Leinster not winning it again for a fifth year in a row. Always sick of the lads winning it. Like, and they, I'd say they're sick of winning it. Like, it's like, oh, another URC, great. So it's kind of given them more of a buzz to it. But the Welsh teams, I think, need to catch up. We barely talked about them all season because they're not performing. So they need to have a really jig of the Welsh Rugby Union, need to have a look at what they're doing down there. And it kind of hopefully that will spruce it up for next year. But South African teams have really made it much better, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're a big fan of the Welsh teams, aren't you, Darren?
So go back to the South African teams. Generally, a couple of rounds into the season, like you were kind of wondering, cards on the table, I thought, all right, there's going to be another restructure here. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
And I do think you actually have to give the URC a lot of credit because this is the same season where you had teams stuck in South Africa. Yeah. There was planes being chartered. Yeah, like gosh. It was an absolute shambles. And the fact that they've got from there and they got like that as a final was very fitting for them. And I think they deserve a lot of credit for it because it's a new competition. You're making huge decisions. Mm. But listen, it's brilliant. It started when Munster went down the second time and they lost twice. And everyone thought, oh, this is interesting. Yeah. And then Ulster went down and lost twice. Mm. And then
Leinster
went down and lost twice, albeit with a slightly depleted team. And straight away, it was like, well, those three teams would never go to Wales and lose twice. And as the South African teams just started disrupting.
But they were kind of exciting and controversial losses, weren't they, as well? Like Ulster, they were marred. You know, they were... Well, at one stage 21 points behind and the comeback tries disallowed. Like, so there was always lovely talking points, you know what I mean? Mm. It was never just a straightforward, oh, they went to South Africa and lost, you know?
Yeah.
And
even games, yeah.
Yeah, even the South Africans were at times so ill-disciplined and like still got away with it, or, you know, their kicking game, or just they lived on the edge all the time. You just didn't know what to expect from them, and I loved that.
Yeah. You mentioned Scottish teams there a while ago as well, saying that they probably need to improve. I thought Edinburgh did really well this season.
Yeah.
Glasgow probably need to improve, but I thought Edinburgh were exciting. They got a win down in South Africa.
Yeah.
Them and Connacht are the only teams to get a win. And I was really impressed with them. Like, we have Mark Bennett coming up in a while, who's playing really well. So it's good to see those guys doing good.
Yeah, but the Italians as well, I suppose. Do you know, it's just again, like, you know, we're thinking through moments of the year and like Italy finally, what, 35, 36?
Yeah. Bit of a lot of good games, in fairness.
They did, like, they were nice and, you know, they...
Poor Zimbardo.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? So it'll just have a knock-on effect internationally and just on the game as a whole. So, yeah, look, it's goals and not everything's going to be perfect. Yeah.
Also, when you have a better competition and more good teams, it does make, like, teams like Glasgow and Edinburgh, I think they had a decent season. Like, I think
Glasgow started well,
seventh and eighth.
Yeah.
Which traditionally in the league you'd rolled your eyes, but if you look, so it means six teams, like, obviously were in front of you, but that's no mean feat now with the quality of teams, because, do you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to finish in particular. Those three Irish provinces, and I think one of the real downsides of Irish rugby this season was Connacht as a whole in the URC. I just thought they were so, so disappointed, and that's one thing I think looking forward to next year. I just would love to see more from them. I think the standard of the competition is really, really high, but Connacht are a better team than that.
Yeah, they show glimpses of it throughout the year, though. They had some really good games. As we always said, they were just up and down, and they didn't have that... They don't have that second line of players that they can just throw out in the middle of like November, December, like, you know, they're going to get the win that Leinster have, or I was going to say Munster probably don't have. They probably will next year have that second line of players.
You know what, and that's what I think is going to be really interesting about the URC as a whole the next year. And it does maybe sounds like an Irish guy making an excuse, but like I played, I'm not saying I was any good at rugby, but I was there.
Most capped Munster, man.
Guilty. I honestly do not believe from the bottom of my heart that would have been an all-South African final if those South African teams had been playing in Europe. So I think if, you know, Munster hadn't had the back-to-back against Leinster or Exeter, if Leinster hadn't, I know Leinster didn't win Europe, but they went through off the back of the Six Nations, those huge games at the same time trying to compete for points. I do not believe that that would have been an all-South African final.
It would have been too much rugby for South Africa.
Yeah, well, I just don't really buy into this thing that like Leinster have been found out and Leinster are crap. I just don't think people understand how difficult it is to compete on both fronts. Yeah. So, first of all, it's a lot of rugby. I think with there being a last 16, was there eight? There was five games in Europe and three. So to go the distance, it's eight fixtures.
Eight knockout
there's only
games,
There's only 18 games in the league. It's nearly 50% of your season again off the back of a Six Nations. I just think it's so hard, like logistically flying around the world, mentally, emotionally, physically to compete on both fronts. So I don't think it's not sour grapes actually, because I was delighted to see Leinster get beaten. But I think it'll be like next year. Like the South African teams,
is there much of a jump in levels? You know what I mean? Like, there's a huge jump from going like playing club rugby to playing international. But how big a jump is it if you played a URC game to playing a European game? Like, is it like much tougher?
Well, yeah, in the past it would have been, but now I mean smaller than ever because like it's kind of a the quality of the opposition's up. You know, let's like if you call a spade, like the league before the South African teams. I mean. Half those teams aren't good enough to play in the Champions Cup, you know. So it is like it's a big jump. You would see teams come into Belfast or Limerick and like, you know, a depleted Scarlets team who were maybe playing on the same weekend as like a Welsh playing the Barbarians, and you know, Ulster would get a bonus point in 45 minutes and take off, you know, five of their best players. It's not like that anymore. So listen, I'm excited already. More ruggers.
Yeah.
I am glad you brought up though about the Leinster not being found out, because I think we kind of said it, like obviously La Rochelle and they wanted that fifth star so much, but I don't think as well people attribute like we just see this like lads that this is their job, you know, for professional rugby, but like you said, the mental side of it. And I think as much as Leinster have depth, I think to constantly being rotated in, which is good, and the lads seem to have a buy-in, you still have to get up for those games, you know that. Do you know what I mean? And like the mental side, we don't attribute enough to. Do you know what I mean? And I just think, it's not a fan.
You think going into training 8 weeks in a row, like every Monday morning, right, guys, we have another big game this week. Like, you have to stay mentally
big game this week.
Another big game this week. Like, analysis of last game, next game, who you're going up against. It's just, I'd say the Leinster lads were just exhausted.
Exhausted. You're always switched on. And if you're not in the starting team, you know yourself, the responsibility of making sure training is facilitated and you're, you know, you have your homework done, trying to be the opposition, and, you know, you don't let anyone down. So, I think mentally to switch on.
And
so,
they still played really well. I don't think they got found out. Yeah. I thought they played really well.
They also, you have to factor in the fact that you look back at the Rimmer Internationals when Ireland beat the All Blacks, and you look at the Six Nations where they literally lost out by a point to France. Yeah. Yeah. Like 13 out of 15 players were Leinster players.
Well,
so they had to get themselves up for those five Six Nations games against the All Blacks.
On this time off, the Leinster lads just put on green jerseys. Like,
they're still
playing.
They're going to New Zealand now. about 3 weeks.
Another one to New Zealand.
Exactly.
It's mad. Like, yeah, and let's be honest, like, you know, they were a whisker, like I say a whisker from winning the Champions Cup, yeah. Which is, other than the World Cup, potentially the World Cup's probably the hardest rugby competition in the world to win. And they were, like, closer than a whisker. Do you know, anything like, you know, goes wrong.
One decision, like they've won it. Like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like literally. And yeah, I don't buy into this. Like Leinster being found out and Leinster, like they're in turmoil. That's an exaggeration. But yeah, it's just not. It's just not. No, they lost two games of rugby and they're human.
Yeah.
What do we think of like Munster next season? So as we've spoken about, Ulster, we think, bounced back and had a really good end of the season. We're probably unlucky. I could have went through to a final. I think Connacht, as we said, we've spoken about them loads of times. They have a lot of work to do in terms of, well, they have depth coming in. Leinster, I don't think Leinster have anything to worry about. But Munster, I mean, what are we looking at them towards next season? Do we see, like, as you predicted, we've got Leamy in there, Prendergast coming in there. You've got Roundtree taking over. They're still short a few signings, but... Do you see him improving next year?
I really hope so. I really hope so. Because we can't just keep making excuses. Like, Munster need to go back to winning ways. It's been too long now. And it's, like, expected that Munster have to be in the top. And they haven't been in the top in a while. And, like, I'm really passionate about them. Like, Munster just need to start winning again. Like, do you know what I mean? It's just... And they've done the moving around of the coaches. We have some Munster guys back in that Darren knew was happening. And now I just think the biggest thing we were kind of speaking off air was we need to get some front rows in, some new young front rows. I know there's a couple coming up through the academy, but I think that's really where Munster are lacking. Because if you think back to the days when 06 Heineken Cup win, 08 Heineken Cup win, our pack was a joke.
Monsters.
Like, monsters. Like, yeah. And they were just dominating. And then you'd have Rog kicking into the corner, like, and you had really good backs. But I think we just need a new Munster front row. Nothing against the lads that are there, just change the guard and then. You have these big signings, Fekitoa coming in. He's not going to come in and win the URC,
no.
If you like.
You Snyman, at least, hopefully he'll be fit next year. He's like a brand new signing and he's someone that will help that front row.
Yeah.
There's young guys there, as in, look, we'll speak another once we get onto our team of the season, but guys like Josh Witcherly, he needs to be playing a lot more minutes next year.
Yeah.
The guys like, even someone like Keenan Knox, who hasn't really got a chance at tight end. And then even in that hooker, like someone like Scott Buckley. Like, we need to give these guys, instead of going, let's bring in this South African guy for 2 months, or let's bring in this guy from Super Rugby, which is what they did in the past, with guys like Jenkins and whatnot. Like, there's players there to be used. Hopefully Roundtree will see that.
Well, the good thing, you see, Josh Witcherly is only like 22. So for a front row, they need to be getting minutes because you can't learn your trade as a front row. Like, it's dark arts it is. And you can only actually do that when you're playing games. So the fact he's 22, he's probably a little bit ripe, but that's why they just need to go in. Like, Dan Sheehan will probably talk about for team this season. And probably one weakness, if I see him, and I'm not a hooker, but I'm obviously a loose head. And I could see him even in Ireland, he's kind of a weakling at scrum time, but he brings so much around the park. But he'll get there, because the more games he gets, the more knowledge he'll get and the players around him. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think if Roundtree, you know, an ex-forward himself, front row, he will look at that and hopefully...
Yeah. I think Leamy's going to have a big impact next year as well in the overall pack and the mentality. Because I was talking to some of the Leinster lads and they really back Leamy and what he did for them. Yeah. And they're actually they're fuming that he's leaving, like. They're all snapping, be like, oh, he came in for a year, learned all our playbook, and now he's going down to Munster. Genuinely.
He was a contact coach, wasn't he, at Leinster?
He was like,
coach. Like, of all the things Leinster do well, they probably don't get enough credit for that. Do you know what I mean? Because the reason they look so fluent and so, like, some of their lines around time and so good is because of their contact and their breakdown and their set piece. I think it's a good time to be a Munster fan. I don't, again, I love having a bit of a pop at them. I don't think I think anytime there's new staff coming in, I think that's really exciting. I don't think they're as bad as everyone thinks they did. I think if you look through their season, you know, they lost to Toulouse. Like, it wasn't even a loss. I mean, it was...
penalties.
They were an absolute shambles in Belfast, to give them that, which was very unlike them. And, you know, I don't really have
They were wrecked off the back of the Toulouse game, though. Like,
it doesn't help.
Yeah.
I think if you look through, like, a lot of their season, like, they win a lot of games. They've won a lot of games. They put themselves really close to where they need to be. I don't think they need to... I don't think... again, probably like what I said about Lance, I don't think there's this kind of... crisis at Munster. I just think Munster fans are still adapting to the fact that they're just nowhere near as good as Leinster, and I think it's very hard to a pill to swallow when you've come from the team of the noughties. So I think it's an exciting time for Munster. One area I think Munster have got wrong has been recruitment. And you know, maybe I was wrong, bringing it up in front of Rory when he was on the show, but you know, signing centres, like, that's not going to win you trophies. And I actually agree with you, Lindsay, about the likes, like these younger guys, and these younger guys, they need to play. Mm. But you're not going to win trophies with a couple of young lads in the front row. You're like, you're just not.
Yeah.
You look at like the Stormers, like two of the best props in the world. Do you know what I mean? You look at Leinster, more than two of the best props. Like, yeah. The best teams have young players coming through, but they also have top quality. And again, incredibly unlucky with the Snyman injury. Like, and you just can't, like, so unlucky. He's a guy who literally would have made a huge difference. They just do not have enough quality in their front five to be a team that wins trophies.
That kind of top percentage of games, like, where Munster just aren't finishing off, where a couple of years ago in the noughties they would have won those quarterfinals, semifinals, and we expected them to win, but they're doing well throughout the season. As you said, they're one of the top try scoring teams. They've had a good performances, but it's just that end of season games where Munster need to go out and win the semifinal. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're expected.
I think we've got, like, I put it this, like, it's like Man United syndrome.
Yeah.
Like Man United, like, everyone still thinks Man United are brilliant, like, but Man United have fallen off, but also all the teams around them have got better. And what have Man United done terribly in the last few years?
Signings.
Recruitment. Yeah. You know, and that, you do that for so many years. You do it for three or four seasons and all of a sudden you're way behind, because what Munster need now at the moment is they need to sign like five players. And you can't get five like top players in one window. You can only get one or two top players, but they keep getting centres.
And in the middle of that process, their wee brother in blue has turned into an absolute mutant. Literally an absolute like world rugby mutant in terms of like winning trophies and like producing players, which is not easy for Munster fans to watch.
No, it's not. Anyway, we will move on because we have a lot of stuff to get through. We're going to move on to our URC. Now, this is our Irish-based team of the year, because if we had South Africans in there, like, they'll just dominate the whole team. So we've seen the dream team that the URC put out. So this is the House Rugby Dream Team, based on Irish players only. Right?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Right. Yes,
so we're going to start with the front row. So like, this is all up for debate now. We'll call out the team first and then we'll see who agrees with what, because what we did is we all kind of picked a team each and then we kind of put it together based on votes and put it into a magic machine and come out with this. So we've got Loosehead, we've got Josh Witcherly, as we mentioned there, the young Munster prop. Hooker, Dan Sheehan of Leinster. Tight head, Tig Furlong. Second row, we've got Leinster's Ross Maloney, Munster's Finian Witcherly. Into the back row, we've got Cian Prendergast from Connacht at six. Nick Timoney of Ulster at seven, Jack O'Donoghue at eight. And you're going to love the back line, Lindsay, because at nine, Craig Casey, Munster's very own. 10, we've got someone who's on the show recently enough, Ross Byrne of Leinster. Another person who's on the show recently, Mac Hansen of Connacht, is in the left wing. Big Stuart McCluskey is in at 12, alongside his Ulster teammate James Hume, with Rob Balakoon on the other wing and Michael Lowry. Jesus, Ulster are dominating that back
line. 12 to 15 there, it's all Ulster men. Like,
section of the team I was given.
Lads, like, come on, it's a full Ulster.
So, quick, we'll start first anyway. Like, any positions, Darren, that you're in disagreement with?
We could have got a few more Ulster players in, couldn't we? Do you know, genuinely, it is quite tough when you sit down and you try your best to go through who's actually played in the URC, who hasn't, who's, and because of so much depth and all the Irish teams, you know, you look through and he actually hasn't played that many games, and then keeping my Ulster hat on, the one name I thought could have got in there was maybe Alan O'Connor in the second row. Okay. I had no real complaints about the front row. Three guys who've been absolutely brilliant. As I said, it's hard to think off the top of your head, how many games has Porter played, how many games Kelleher played, and you know what I mean?
Well, that's one thing we need to get out there, is that I put in a lot of different people, but it's been changed around because we're based off URC performances. So
basically,
we're going, like, who played more URC games? Who'd like? Where I was like, I'd have Porter in, obviously. I'd have Jean Klein in, even though he was in the URC team.
He was in the URC team, yeah. So he's someone, like I said, it's up for debate. Like, I think I picked Jean Klein myself in my team. And
I put Jean Klein in for Witcherly.
Witcherly had a great season as well. So, I mean, it's a tough one.
But equally, when I think of Ross Maloney, who has had a great year, was it not in, there was one of the games at the Aviva, was it not the Toulouse game at the Aviva? That's kind of where I remember him.
Yeah.
Just like But it was a European Cup game.
Yeah.
You know, so there's a bit of... But listen, it's a good team.
I put him in, you know, because I felt aggrieved that he didn't actually start in the semi-final against the Bulls. And I think, you know, he's just one of them guys who does his job.
Like
he's just one of them guys who's consistent. He does his job. And I just don't think he gets the credit for it because he's in amongst the team. Like, if you're in with Ryan Barr, James Ryan, like all these big names in the second row who just take over.
Ross,
and
Ross
I just
think he never gets the headline.
He never gets it. And I just think he's a guy. And like, you know, looking through, like Nick Timoney had like an absolute ridiculous season. Like he's 274 tackles. But like Scott Penny had before his injury had like, if you look back at his stats, unbelievable. Like he's... maybe 7 tries, like he started so many, like 12 games, but like then he fell off and you forget him, do you know? Because again, there's so many performances just like, you know, cloud you, but...
Thought as a whole, that back row, I think is, I think you could definitely put other players forward, but I think it's hard to argue that there's three. Yeah.
Like that 7 jersey especially, like you could have Conor Oliver in there who's been class all season and the small matter of Josh van der Veer, European Player of the Year, but he, do you know what I mean? I don't think he's... has done a huge amount in the URC this year, but he's still been pretty good. But he hasn't been as good as Nick Timoney, I don't think.
Yeah.
In the URC anyway, specifically.
Yeah, you could easily swap Conor Oliver in there for Nick Timoney, but we're going to Nick Timoney's stats and they're a joke. Do you want to rattle off a couple of them?
I can't. I saw a thread on Twitter we were having a chat before, and it was just, you know, when you put a lot of the metrics in, like, you know, per minute and per matches played, he comes out on it's a really interesting thread on Twitter, and he comes out on top of just like literally everything. And what it's just very uncommon that a player would be such in terms of workload, so many rucks and so many carries, and normally there's one area of the game that has to suffer. Like if you're the likes of a Roos, you know, at the Stormers, and you carry the ball and you're top of the carries every week, you're probably not going to be top of the tackles because that's not what you're...
Yeah.
Or there's players that maybe the likes of a Ross Maloney who, if you go, you're like, he's top of like positive ruck impacts because that's his role in the team. And there's normally a trade-off.
Yeah.
And Nick Timoney just comes out, you know, on top all three. So
you could not pick him.
A little bit of Ulster bias, of course, down there.
But
he plays a lot in the URC.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. His durability as well. He's playing every single week. You can see why he got brought down to New Zealand.
Still not Ulster's most capped player though, so he's a while to go yet. You
know? He's not far off.
A few rocks to hit.
What about the back line? I think, I suppose, Craig Casey, he was in the URC Dream Team of the Year. Like, we're a big fan of Craig on the show. I think someone like Luke McGrath, who's been like captain in Leinster in a lot of those URC games, another friend of the show, who could easily have been in there.
I saw the Craig Casey come through in the running order before we started the podcast, and I was like, oh, I'd love to go against Lindsay now. But I just honestly, I can't argue. I was like, Craig Casey had a great season. Every time he came on, he probably scored a try, got man the match. Like, and I was another person that might come in touch a distance or get in the 9 jersey would be Nathan Doak. I thought he was incredible this year.
Yeah, especially the first half of the season, he was class.
First half of the season, then he for some reason just kind of dropped off.
Cooney came back in, really, didn't he? Like, and took a spot.
Lindsay makes a good point. It's a long season, isn't it? And players go through spells. And I think, you know, John Cooney was out for a few months and Doak came in and did really, really well. And then towards the end of the season, Cooney really started to play. And then
he was back to himself, Cooney.
I don't think it fizzled out for Doak at all. Again, he didn't, I don't think he was making mistakes.
Sure, at one stage we were like, Nathan Doak should be in the Irish jersey. Remember that at the start of the season? Yeah, because he was just consistently getting tries, kicking, man of the match. Like,
and I still actually don't think I still don't think he will be that far going forward, you know, because at the end of the day, the reason Casey's there is because he's played more for Munster, but, you know, that's because he's closer to Murray than Doak is to Cooney, obviously, according to the coaches.
Yeah.
And actually, Luke McGrath, like, he's a guy just who, like, is probably wondering how he's ended up, you know, so far away. Mm. Like, he's actually never, like, I've never seen him play badly.
No.
He's such a good player. He's so consistent, so, like, such a good leader for Leinster as well, particularly, you know, when there are a couple of players missing. So he could have been with the shout, but I couldn't really argue. Yeah,
Casey's been great.
I think actually Luke McGrath welcomed him and his partner welcomed his little boy Bobby, if I got it right, this week. So congratulations.
I remember seeing that. 10, that's something someone you were talking about last week. You were surprised that he's not in the Irish squad, is Ross Byrne, like, who, well, every year, like, the man is just so super consistent, isn't he?
incredible. I obviously wanted Sexton there, but he hasn't played enough URC games, if any, really.
He hasn't played in the URC in 4 seasons. 4 years,
so we can't have Sexton. But it was a toss-up between Ross and Harry for me, both the Byrne brothers. Obviously, Harry got brought down to New Zealand, but as you said there, Jason, Ross, every week is just so good for Leinster, and he just runs that back line. And kind of like Ross Maloney, doesn't get the headlines for it.
Yeah.
He just keeps going, does his job every week, and we had him in here. He's obviously really passionate to get back into the Irish jersey. And I think if he keeps going the way he's going, he should get more time. But his younger brother's knocking on the door ahead of him, isn't he?
I think he's top point scorer. Isn't
look
that
look how good Leinster have been the last few years. People forget, like, Johnny's missed a lot of games. I mean, Johnny's not there. It's Ross that's leading the charge and winning all those games in Europe and in the URC with Leinster. So he just gets forgotten about for some reason because Johnny Sexton is Johnny Sexton. By the way,
like, he's quite unfortunate with a couple of... and rugby, like, as we all know, it's so, so fickle. And I think what's happened to Ross Byrne, he got a couple of opportunities for Ireland. I actually think maybe twice against England.
And they were
complete poison chalice fixtures in that, as a halfback, when your pack get like,
when you're the abs.
And he played, I think he played twice against England. And he was pretty dreadful through absolutely no fault of his own. I mean, Dan Carter wouldn't have looked good the way Ireland got treated by England that day. And I just feel like internationally, it just seems that everyone's kind of said, right, well, he's not the next guy because he didn't perform in those games. I think he's very unfortunate. He's a very, very good player.
He started in any URC team, like, I think at 10. He's just incredible across the board.
Definitely. Looking at the rest, Mac Hansen, like, I was surprised he wasn't in the URC team, to be honest with you. I mean, Mac has been class all year, like, and he scored 10 or 11 tries anyway. I don't know, you can check those stats afterwards, but he's definitely scored a nice few. McCluskey, as you said, McCluskey's been absolutely... Someone actually gave out to me last week saying that you must not watch a lot of Ulster games because I said it's one of his best seasons, but I still think... Because they're like, Klusky's always been good. I was like, he has always been good, but he's been particularly good this year, I think.
I don't think he's been any better this year than he has been. I think he's been brilliant for 4, 5, 6, 7. I just think for whatever reasons he doesn't fit into Andy Farrell's plans, and that's the international side of the conversation just over, really, I think. But he's been brilliant for a number of years for Ulster. And he and Hume this year, Hume has just been ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. I think he's going to play some. I just think Ireland's three best centres are the three best centres, and I don't think we should be having a conversation about somebody getting in there, but he has been that good. He's been absolutely ridiculous, and I don't know who you put him in front of. I don't know when you, but he is just...
Yeah, James Hume can't go in ahead of Bundy, Robbie Henshaw or Gary. Like, I just can't see that happening, but I do think he'll play against the Maoris. He might come onto the bench for one of the tests. Another guy that missed out that no one's really talking about is Chris Farrell. I thought he had a good season.
His first half of the season, he only had a kind of good second half, last quarter. I don't think he started the season well. I think it's why he lost his spot in the Irish squad as well.
He picked up a good bit of form, though, in the middle of the season. Remember when that went up to Ulster and he had a really good game?
First
game. But he just hasn't got back to where he initially was when he first came back to Munster. So I think it was unfortunate for him. But I'd love to see him back in an Irish jersey, but there's no space, really, is there?
Too many players.
There isn't,
And the age profile starts to work. Like, it's not long. You don't have to be that far into your 20s before people start going,
pushing on. Do you think it's gotten to that stage with him? He's only like 26, 27, is he?
Maybe 28, 29. I'm not 100%.
I would be very surprised if he played for Ireland again and it's not through a lack of quality. I think he's a really, really good player. I just think
too much competition.
The guys are similar age profile around him. And I think the likes of James Room and Frawley as well, who's obviously a very different player to all the other set midfielders that Ireland have. I hope he proves me wrong because I like him, but I don't see it.
It's a fair point to make. Looking at the final two positions, I think on the right wing, obviously Rob Balakun is the outstanding candidate there. I don't think we can.
No.
There's a few other players we could mention, but I think he's been class all year. But the last one, full back, is definitely up for debate. I know you reckon Hugo Keenan could be in there. I also think, despite Munster's season, I thought Mike Haley was class this year.
I have to agree with you. I think Mike Haley deserves a mention. I think we've had him, like, any time we've done analysis on Munster's good games, he's been key to that. He's scored some great tries. I think he'd be solid.
Mike Haley's been very consistent. He could have easily solid in there. I think Lowry's just had the season of
of his dreams. So yeah,
he's got into the Irish squad and everything.
You can't knock the glory.
Once he's not playing 10, he's class.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. He's playing at fullback. But I think Balakun's obviously a freak of an athlete. I would have put Conway in there instead of Balakun. I just think Conway just offers so much security on the right wing.
Yeah.
Like airily, he just does everything right. His tackles, his finishing. I'd put Conway in there just from like as a security standpoint. But Balakun's obviously going to light up the world for you. But I just think Conway's just, and he's played a good bit of URC games as well. Conway.
That's true. Even James Lowe's played a good few URC games. That's another guy we're forgetting about as well. Like I know he was injured and missed a bit of it. Like, but he played plenty of those big games. So
yeah,
lots of wingers put in there. But unfortunately, there's only two spots left. But we'll move on. We'll move on. We've got a special mention to the South African players. So we've all picked kind of like the South African players who really stood out for us. We've got four guys here. So obviously Evan Roos, who has been an absolute monster this year for the Stormers. He's in the Springbok squad now. He like won like all three awards in the for the URC. Another guy is Siabelos Senatla with the Stormers, who was an absolute freak of nature as well. Leland Zass, who I believe is the top scorer in the competition this year. And then an old friend of yours, Marcel Cotier with the Bulls. I think I mentioned him because that's a guy that went through such a horrific time with injury, and he's back in the Springbok squad now again, and he's back to when Ulster initially signed, we were like, wow, what a signing. And to come back from the injuries he came back from, and to the level he's got himself back to again, it's a mark of the man, really, isn't it?
Yeah, he's an incredible player, lovely guy, and he scored a boatload of tries as well. I think he's
11 tries.
Yeah, something scandalous like that, like for a back row.
And that was actually one thing I really enjoyed was getting to see those South African players and getting to know them. Guys, that, let's be honest, like there's a few household names who you'd seen, you know, with Webb Ellis a couple of years ago, but apart from that, we didn't know. And it was guys like, actually for me, obviously Roos, but Senatla and Zass. I had never heard of Zass before. Mm. He was like phenomenal.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There was that, I was commentating on this quarterfinal against Edinburgh. I'm like, I actually don't think there's that many players floating about that beat so many players just for fun. Like, he's quite physical as well. He gets the ball and he shrugs off two players every single time without fail. So I really enjoyed sort of seeing those kind of players. Long may it continue. There'll be more to come next year.
Another South African player that really impressed me that was consistent all year was Werner Kock on the wing for the Sharks. I played against him in the Sevens tour and he's just one of the nicest guys around. Mm. South African guys are so lovely. But his, like, his aggression every single time he comes into contact, and we have a try coming up now soon from him. I just think a tip to my hat to Werner Kock as well. Really good season.
Yeah, definitely. Do you have any other special mentions?
No, I picked the two forwards.
Yeah.
To be honest, and like Evan Roos is, I think he's top three in some of the stats for carries, defenders beaten. Like, he's just an animal, and to have that hands and that playmaker at eight, you know, it's sometimes hard to find. And like to shun out like the likes of Jack Conan or like Jack O'Donoghue had a standout season, you know, so you're like, when you go through even our own Irish players like that had standout seasons, I think the lads that we've mentioned, and I know we're concentrating on South African, but they have been standout, and Coutier. I think as well as leadership, like he was so calm and with the Bulls, I think he was key to Leinster that day. I think he set the bar and the tone and the aggression, so I'm happy enough with
wonder who Rassie will start now with it, like with, he didn't bring Vermeulen. I think Vermeulen might have to get an operation or something, or he might be.
Vermeulen was on crutches after the game, so I think he was. I'm not.
That's a tough choice. They're both the season both of them have had. Like,
I have a feeling for some reason he's going to go with Roos, but I don't like. I'm not really sure. I still think over there they see. I still think they see Coutier as more of a flanker over there as well. I think it's because of like their. They're just such big people. And I think over here, Marcel is like a number eight. Do you know what I mean? Whereas actually, if you put him beside
he's
those
very
guys,
small. He's a small
eight.
Yeah.
Put him beside
not if you put him on the scales. He's not small. But if you put him beside the likes of Rusik, he is that little bit smaller. And he does get over the ball a bit more like a flanker. So I think for him to play, I don't know, what's the injury status of Peter Steff the Toy? Because he's been in Japan. I'm not sure.
I think he might be fit. I remember because... Yeah, I think he might be fit again. Yeah. I think he should be okay.
You'd expect Khaleesi to play.
Khaleesi, yeah.
That's... Jesus Christ.
Good luck.
That's just frightening.
You wouldn't want to be a Welsh the thing with Razzie, the way he plays, and you saw in the World Cup win, like, the bench are just as impactful as the starters. Like,
bomb squad.
Yeah, exactly. The bomb squad. Like, so whoever's going to be playing, like, they're just interchangeable. Like, incredible players.
Move on to our moment of the year. I had a couple of different moments. Like, mine definitely... as you mentioned already, I thought the dancers, I remember when they first came up with the dancers, this guy here. So when this guy first came on, I didn't know that this guy was a professional dancer, right? And that they had this organized for the game. And I remember I made a TikTok and a reel for Joe, right? And put that viral song, what's your man, the BBC guy, My Money Don't Jiggle Jiggle. Oh, yeah. So I put that on. The video ended up getting 167 million views. What? And it was like the most viewed video in the history of Joe. And I was like, I want these guys back every week. Yeah. This is the greatest content ever.
Because 167 million
views.
That's like
the
going on Greg's Instagram. Yeah.
That's nuts, like, man.
Yeah, so like, all because that was, I think, no one knew what was going on. And like, some people were like, is he a player? Is he not a player? So, I mean, I just thought it was brilliant.
That's incredible.
It's just fantastic.
What I love about it is he's a bit heavy set. He's well fed and he's just moving so fluidly.
Like a prop or something.
He looks like a prop, exactly. Yeah. And props can move.
Yeah. Did you meet him when you were down there?
I would love to.
Did you see him in the flesh?
Yeah, it was honestly, it was unbelievable. We spoke earlier in the show about spectacle and that's part of it. Because the Stormers cheerleaders, the females, they come out initially and everyone in the crowd's like, and it's right before kickoff, so it's as the players have gone in from the warm-up. And the crowd are like, right, whatever. And then he came out and the place went ballistic. Like, absolutely. And then for the semi-final and final, he brought out a whole team of like lads and they were like doing, like going back and forward. And it was unbelievable. Like, I genuinely was just sitting there going, like, forget the game.
Yeah.
This is brilliant.
As you said, it's such a good product. Like, and yeah, it just got the crowd going.
The crowd was like, I don't mean like clapping, like they were screaming.
Yeah.
Absolutely loving it. So it was class.
Stuff. Well, it's nice to take off the labels like that. It's only women can be cheerleaders and dancers. And yeah, like, you know, you men can dance.
It's, good, it's true. It's good. Like, you're moving away from stereotypes. You're bringing the whole thing in. Like, do you know what I mean? You're dragging it into the 21st century, but also it's brilliant.
Yeah,
you
know? And he can move.
And I love that they're wearing the full kit as well.
Yeah, it's class.
Yeah, and the fact they didn't tell anyone that he was a cheerleader. Yeah, I love it.
One of my standout moments off the pitch, and there was more, like, there's loads we haven't mentioned, but was Nick McCarthy coming out. And it's not the fact that he came out. I think the stance he took as a role model, as a leader, and the bravery in a, let's be honest, a very stereotypical, like, you're shrouded in what masculinity is meant to be. But most importantly, I think the support from his teammates publicly to just say, like, he's a great guy, we love you, we're behind you, you're so brave. Leinster themselves as a club. And I think it just sends no more than the dancers and everything else. And, you know, we'll cover other moments. I think it's just a big moment to say, like, you know, the spirit of rugby and what we stand for in sport, difficult conversations, but you can be who you want to be and you don't have to be any, you know, again, labels, get rid of it. So, but there was more for, you know, we haven't women's moments of the year, like any a brains try at the end, and the women missing out on a difficult year, make sure we didn't get the wooden spoon, the sevens winning their first medals in Spain, you know, so there's loads of moments, but that was my standout.
Yeah, I played with Nick all the way up from 18 schools, 19s, 20s. He actually captained my 20s team. Such a nice guy. And like, you've been in rugby dressing rooms, you all have. It's a bit of toxic masculinity. Like, I'd say he found it quite out. And I actually was chatting him about it. And he was quite nervous about coming out publicly. But I was like, man, think about what you've done for anyone that's seen you coming out now. Like a young guy being like, I'm kind of struggling with coming out and talk. Like, I'd say he's helped so many kids.
100%.
And like everyone restoring it and giving the backing online, I think it's just amazing to see. But another kind of shout out to Jack Dunn, who did it years
ago. Absolutely. Yeah. Sorry, yeah. Jack's a great guy.
Yeah. And he came out years ago. So like, also shout to him. He was kind of like a pioneer of it all. Like, so it's nice to see that it's just normalized as well.
Yeah, I did a podcast. I'm sorry, go ahead.
You're going, fine, go on.
No.
Yeah. No, I was just saying that.
I want to hear from Lindsay more, actually. Comes with the podcast.
Yeah, go on, tell us.
No, we did it for Pride Month last year. We did it with Leinster, and Jack was on it. And yeah, he's just a really good guy. And we've kind of on off, you know, just even like he made the Barbarians team, unfortunately, that were COVID stricken last year when I was on it in November. So he's just a great guy, yeah, and he hasn't got the credit. And Aviva have done a piece with him there. You know, with Emerald Warriors and you know, the good side and the good people, but then obviously when the Emerald Warriors lads getting attacked in town. So there's difficult conversations to have, and that's what these do. And it's hard for people to take that responsibility. And I know my own personal, you build everything up, I did, in my head. So it's so difficult, but it's such a relief as well to come out and just be yourself. And I know it's cliche, but
It's good as well. I think rugby, like hashtag rugby values and hashtag rugby family, gets thrown around like way too much because it's not always. So it is really good to see. I think so many other Like for him to come out great, but for everyone else to get in behind it and say like, this is acceptable, this is okay, and do you know what I mean, and change, because there probably are people involved in rugby that still don't think it's okay. So it's nice, you know, the old phrase like, what you permit you promote. It's nice that the big, do you know, names that people are knowing in the games are supporting and saying this is okay. And it will encourage more people to be just,
it does,
you know,
especially with the men. I think I've noticed you'll see there's a lot more openly gay women in sport, but with men, they seem to find, as you said, it's that toxic masculinity that makes it harder for them to say, come out and say it. Because we've had like a couple of footballers come out recently over in England. Like, there still isn't a single Premier League footballer that has come out. Like, and do you know what I mean? Like, and
same things with NBA.
Like, same with the NBA. Same, like, and this is only directed, this is a real big case in rugby. Like, so it's only going to help the game, and it's only going to help young people. I mean, you saw what Nigel Owens has done for people. I mean, Nigel Owens like tried to commit suicide because he didn't want to come out and tell his parents he was gay. I mean, that's not right. Do you know, to even think like that is ridiculous, and to be, the fact that he was put in that position in the first place is shocking.
100%.
Do you know, and that was the society to put him in that position. Like, so
when we ran Union Cup 2 years ago, and Nigel was involved, and even equality, having a women's side first off, do you know, like, that rugby is not only a men's game, like it was the women's. And but what it brought together was the family affair. Like, yes, you know, there was great sponsors, including Bank of Ireland, who sponsored the show. And it was just, the weekend in DCA was just the epitome of what sport brings and what it values from the grassroots up, that it's just people coming together for a common love of a game. And it was just crack. And there was winners, there was losers, there was, but just everyone had a smile on their face. The sun actually shone from Thursday until, Catherine Sapone, you know, handed over trophies, and then it absolutely poured. But they're just the moments we cherish, and they're not always. And I think we're going to cover another one now that we'll see covers the values.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think this, just to kind of the last point about Nick McCarthy's thing, is like, it's bigger than rugby, it's bigger than sport. Yeah. Like, what and himself and Jack Dunn, like, it's just, it's unbelievable to see it, and the outpouring of support, like the Johnny Sexton, Gary Ringrose, everyone who's now, everyone's talking with them, and they're like, no, focus on this. This is bigger than rugby. Like, so I'm delighted for it as a whole. But moving on, because we could talk about that for ages, is at my moment of the year, bringing it back to Munster, we're trying to claim it as a Munster thing, is Ronan O'Gara's win for La Rochelle in the European Cup.
And Ken Dallin got the jukebox of the year.
can we get my picture with Ronan Donegroyne back up in post, because, like, you know, running onto the pitch, and I was like,
happy. That's a moment. Just the Roger story, I kind of mentioned it before. I was like, for him going from not getting the send up that he deserved to going down to Crusaders, doing his trade down there, then La Rochelle, or then Racing, then La Rochelle. He's been working at that for years, and now it's paid off, and he's really built a culture in La Rochelle, is what I've been told. And just for him to get that win is incredible. And I'd say Munster are only gagging to get him back, but I don't think they
won't
ever
be getting
will.
Him back for a while anyway. I'd say that much.
No, it was class, wasn't it? Genuinely, I enjoyed it. And just so much respect for, he could have easily walked into probably about 50 or 100 coaching jobs in Ireland, but obviously for him to back himself and go, no, I'm going to go and I'm going to coach in the best environments in the world. The world's his oyster now, isn't it?
He's probably the most wanted coach in the world right now. Himself with the Crusaders coach.
Him and Scott Robertson, I think Scott Robertson, like, he's won like, what, 5 or 6 now in a row. And if he doesn't get that, if he sticks around for another season and doesn't get that All Blacks job after the World Cup, if what's name stays on, I think he's going to come over to England or France or something, because
that's what the
I'd say
is.
He's just sick of winning Super Rugby titles at this stage, and he needs to come out and test himself, because he's done. He, you know what I mean? Same with O'Gara. Like, I think O'Gara will stay there if he wins a top 14 in the next couple of seasons with them. Yeah. I think he's the kind of guy that, once he's achieved what he can achieve, he moves on. Yeah. Whereas, like, as you said, it could be very easy for me. He can go, oh, give me a nice big fat 6-year contract with La Rochelle and I'll sit here no matter what happens. And a lot of coaches do that.
Yeah.
But he's kind of like, okay, and he did the same with Crusaders. He could have stayed. Scott Robinson didn't want him to leave. Yeah. But he's like, I have to win in back-to-back Super Rugby titles. And he's, I'm going to go down to La Rochelle.
He went to Racing first then, didn't he?
That's the moment he went to La Rochelle after Crusaders. He went to Racing straight away. Okay. And then, like, he actually won a top 14 with Racing. Yeah. Then he went from Racing to the Crusaders, won 2 Super Bowl titles. And was like, okay, I've done what I can do here. Then he went down to La Rochelle, and now he's won the Champions Cup with him.
That's a man, like, grinding, isn't it? Just learning his trade. Like, it's incredible to see. And it's paid off. And the most impressive thing with Rog is, I think, the brain power he's put behind beating Leinster. Like, so many people can't do it. And he's completely just manufactured twice now. They beat La Rochelle beat Leinster last year and they beat him this year.
He's obviously just so good
at just building a culture and a mindset and a game plan. I think that's the most impressive thing about it.
Definitely, definitely. Your moment of the season was a really lovely moment. Is any recent enough?
Yes, that's the way I am normally, very deep and thoughtful. I picked the medal presentation, the final. I just thought it was unbelievable. And for years we've been watching like these, particularly with COVID, these ropey kind of medal presentations where they get like old blazers out and do you handshake, do you not handshake, do you fist pump, do you kiss? A few cabbages going around, and like you've like, people taking a silver medal, and like I always hate when people are like really quick to or won't let the person put it on. I'm like, come on, like it's not about you. And I just thought, let's get cheesy for a minute. The point, it's all about growing the game. That's the whole point. That's why we're all here. It's the main reason that I love the South African teams being in this competition, is because the local lad from Belfast, like it was 6 weeks ago, the next generation were sitting looking and see a Khaleesi going, that's the guy who's going to have a movie made about him. That's the point of it. So I thought a huge tip of the hat to the URC for just thinking of something a little different.
Yeah.
And you know, being there, like these kids were just like, they were losing it. They couldn't believe it. Yeah. And the Stormers players were brilliant with them. And I thought it was class.
Yeah, well, the South African guys just do it right. Like, that's just a beautiful way of like inspiring kids. Like, do you know what I mean? And it made, as you said, the players engage with them. They wanted to put on the medal, but usually they just like shake the hand and go over and start cheering and around with the trophy. So beautifully done. Yeah.
It's a good thing to say, like, even like if you come to Ireland, like there's lots of like disadvantaged kids or just regular kids and stuff who would love to be in that situation, because we've got a Champions Cup final now next season in Dublin, and we could have a URC final, like we could have, depending on who finishes first, like, but something we should look at, like, because there's loads of like different groups of children and groups of kids and stuff that you can help out and go, right, instead of having this, as you said, the blue blazer, like, you know,
I think people will be they won't want to be copycatted, but I think the bigger picture is actually it shouldn't be a box ticking exercise. It's a huge opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, that's a huge opportunity. The final of the ERC in Dublin next year. Like, you could do something really special for a group of kids or a group of people. Or you go traditional and bore the life out of everyone and have like people cabbaging on TV.
That's
watch any more of that.
That's strange.
We're running out of time, but before we finish up the show, we'll have a quick look at the Ireland team, because we have got these, we're obviously recording this on a Sunday. We've got the first game in New Zealand coming up on Wednesday. We're playing the Maoris in a midweek game, back to the old school tour.
Yes.
I don't know, what are we looking at for that game, guys? I mean, you want to bring some of those young guys in? Like, do you want to like give guys like Nick Timoney game time? Do you want to make sure Gavin Coombs gets game time? Guys like Joe McCarthy, maybe? Even someone like Jeremy Lachman is uncapped. Is that the kind of way we're going to be looking at approaching this game?
Yeah, I think these Maori games, they're there for a reason. They're to play these extra guys. They brought down, 40 players. Like, they have to, if they're going to do it and like bleed these guys in and give them game time, they have to do it. Like, I'd be kind of disappointed if they just pull out a full starting Irish team with the Johnny Sextons and the Bundys and the Garys. I'm like, sure, what's the point? Like, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Give these guys game time and see what they're like. And if they play well enough, then they might crack into the test team.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
What's your prediction for the series, Darren? Do you reckon we can win it?
I'm a little bit worried about it, actually. I just think it's been a really, really long season. And I do feel like this is not the best version of the All Blacks there's been, but I do still feel like they're still the All Blacks. I was on a 3-test tour in New Zealand at the end of 2012, 10 years ago, and it ain't pretty. It is tough at the end of a long season. I think that one culminated in 16-0 in Hamilton. So I'm a little bit just... Listen, I hope I'm wrong. There's just one part of me, or there's part of me that thinks, like, we're going to get pumped in one of these games.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Are we going to come back? Or if we rotate midweek, which we have to, you can't play your full strength. Like, that's what those... So if we rotate midweek and go Full Metal Jackal at the weekend, I think we could lose all five games.
And
I think you could. I'm not saying we will. I said we could.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
And I think if you take a tank in one of the games, what that does for your overall going into the World Cup, if say you ship 50 in one of those games, even if the rest of them are close. So like, I really hope I'm wrong. I just think it's been a really long season and they've played a lot of rugby, and I think New Zealand are going to be better than people think they're going to be because they're New Zealand and New Zealand.
Yeah, I think it's on the flip. When we beat New Zealand up here in the Aviva Stadium, what, last year, whatever month it was, they were wrecked. Like, they came up after a long season. I think that's why New Zealand got caught in the hop. Obviously, Ireland played well, but New Zealand were they were just wrecked, man. They couldn't wait to get home. They've been on the tour for months. Then they went over to France, got beaten up. And now I'm a little bit worried in the back of my head. I think New Zealand are going to be flying it, man. Yeah. They've been quietly going about their business down there. Crusaders are flying it.
Blues are flying it as well. Blues and Crusaders in the final. Like.
Yeah, I think they're gonna come out at just guns blazing. Yeah. They're gonna be pissed off for getting a beat.
I would say as well. The results for the Māori games for me are completely irrelevant. They're about trying to play well and trying to play players. The other side of that is if you go and you win a game, God forbid you win a series, that completely just like that puts Ireland. It actually probably puts Ireland second, and actually would probably put.
To win
Ireland
the World
top
Cup,
like, of it, you know, if Ireland win that series, they could go top of the world rankings. Yeah. Definitely would go into second, and how that sets you up going into the World Cup is so good. It's scary given how things have gone at World Cups after good preparation. So there's a lot on the line for Ireland. I hope I'm wrong. I just have a little bit of a bad feeling about it.
Yeah, really. So I think my gut feeling is that Ireland are going to do really well down there. For some reason, I just think Ireland are going to win it. It might be like a 2-1 win.
2-1.
Yeah.
I have a feeling they're definitely, I think they probably might lose the series, but I have a feeling they'll definitely win at least one of the tests, I think.
Yeah.
And the Māori games, I'm not too worried about the results in the Māori games. It's about getting your James Humes and getting them game time. Yeah. Like, that Māori All Blacks team is going to be damn good. As people forget, like, it's going to be a very good side.
I think if you lost those two midweek games, you won one of the tests and you were really respectable and there were good competitive games in the other tests, I would be happy enough, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I think we'll win one test game, hopefully. If we won one of the Māori, but my key thing is use the Māori games to reward, like, men that you've brought down for, you know, you're rewarding them for good performances, but reward them by making them play, because you will not see how they're going to do in an international jersey against some of the best players in the world if you don't pitch them against them. So I think he will do it, because I think he's shown us that, you know, he's blooded the new players. Joe McCarthy going in, do I think he might make a bench? Maybe. I don't see him getting a lot of game time, but I would like to see Cian Prendergast, who has been in as a development for the Six Nations. I'd like to see Gavin Coombs get a bit of time. I'd like to see I'd love to see Nick Timmy. I really would. I think he's only 26, and as I said, he's had a standout season. I would love to see James Hume the same.
But now is kind of the last opportunity to give these guys a crack at international before they start really prepping for the World
Absolutely.
Cup. Like, you know, because it's going to be autumn internationals and then the Six Nations. But that's going to be like, all right, what team are we playing in the World Cup?
Yeah. We can't make the same mistake that we always make. Yeah. This isn't our World Cup. Next year's the World Cup.
Hopefully I'm not about to be proven wrong. I'd be amazed. Like, if those midweek games weren't happening, that would be a squad of 31, which to me says that there's 9 guys touring there who wouldn't have been touring.
Yeah.
And I would be amazed, absolutely, like, genuinely astounded if those 9 guys did not. I would expect, like, the guys to be. I'd like to see these guys starting. Like, when you talk about giving Gavin Coombs game time, start.
Absolutely.
Start again. Yeah.
No, it's not an idea. And the way rugby is, it's not easy to, like, you say you're playing the All Blacks on a, you know, on a Saturday and you're on the bench and you get on for it. Like, it's not easy then to go and play 80 minutes. So I do think you'll see a lot of, like, if there's 23 players, you know, in a squad, you've got 17 left of us, well, 15 of them could be starting be starting.
This is also a good opportunity for them to figure out the halfback issue. Obviously. Do you know what I mean? Johnny Sexton's there. Like, then it's like, okay, Murray, Casey, Harry Byrne, like, figure it out now who's going to be that stepping up into the role if, for say, Murray's not there or Sexton's not there. Do you know what I mean?
I think you have to start Joey Carberry in one of those to test matches against the All Blacks. I think he has to start one of those. Regardless of whether we're 1-1 after coming into the third test or whether we're down 2-0 or up 2-0, regardless, he needs to start one of those games because he needs, and like, he's got a pretty impressive record against, I don't think Joey Carberry, he never lost to the All Blacks.
He's beaten New Zealand twice.
He's beaten him twice, so every game he's played in, he's won. So he's a bit of a good luck.
And you're going to love this one, Lindsay. I'd love to see Casey get a start against the All Blacks.
Right, that's it.
Go on, that's it.
I think
work here is done.
What a way to end the show. It took us 30 episodes and we finally got
Greg
wants Craig Casey to start.
I want to change my
moment Conor Murray. Let me give my reasons.
Okay. First of all, as I always say, I love Casey. He's a Shannon man.
Arscoloryshan.
But now is the chance. Go on, Casey. There's your start. Show us that you can do it now. Do you know what I mean? We know Murray can do it.
Yeah, exactly. You're dead right. And he's a guy, he needs that game. I think he's a guy who can go on and can be Ireland starting nine.
Yeah.
Because he's only 22.
Like. I'd love to see Casey going up against Aaron Smith. Beautiful pair.
Class. And forgetting about poor Jameson Gibson Park, so he's probably going to start those games. So yeah. That's another guy. So there's just some good nines there, but he might get a chance.
What are you going to say, Lindsay?
Nothing actually. I'm going to put a question to you. Who do you think are going to be, who hasn't really played an Ireland shirt, will get a chance and will stand out on the tour?
Oh, gee, that's a great question.
There you go, my friends.
Joe McCarthy.
Who?
Joe McCarthy.
There you go. That's a good one.
Think
he's going to be one that steps up?
After me saying, I don't think he'll get a.
No, I just have time. A feeling that, like, the guy's only played what 11 or 12 professional games of rugby.
Yeah.
I just have a feeling that he is there because Andy Farrell is going, this is a guy who can bolt for the World Cup, and this style of player is a player that we would really love to have in our armory. Yeah. Mm. And I just feel like that's actually not based on from watching him. To be clear, I actually haven't seen a lot of him. He hasn't played a lot of rugby.
He's a big unit.
I just feel like Ireland are crying out for that.
Yeah.
And I think he's a guy who, as I say, that is not based on anything I've seen from him in the jersey. It's based on what Ireland, I think, need more than ever, and a guy that fits that kind of profile, you know?
Enforcer kind of role. That's really South African second row enforcer, like a Batty's Bota kind of thing. That's what they're comparing him to.
It's the concern with Ireland going into the World Cup, you know, what happens against brute force? And you have to meet it with brute force. I just think he's an interesting guy who could come from nowhere to really be a big part of the World Cup.
One pairing that I'm looking forward to seeing is the wingers. I'm like, who are they going to put in there? Because Mac Hansen and James Lowe obviously both play left. Who's going to play right? Jordan Larmour, is he just going to step up and take his jersey back, which was his for a couple of seasons ago? But who would you see on that right wing? I know Conway's injured. He's sitting home in Ireland. But like that right wing's up for grabs.
I think you can put Mac on the right there. Cause I think Mac can play off both sides. And I think he's lovely hands. He's lovely kick. Yeah. I mean, I know like Mac is right-footed, I believe. And then James in is left-footed. So I think you could play the two of them. Like, and jeez, man. Talk about two unbelievable wingers having a back three with Hugo Keenan, and then are just safe as houses. Like,
yeah, I think that would be the best way to Andy Farrell to do it. Put Mac and James on the wings, but will he do it? Like,
get your best players out there. Like, put Mac and James are going to score tries.
Yeah,
it's close.
But I think Jordan Larmour is playing the rugby of his career at the moment. So do you reward him, put him on, love him jinking in around all the memories and the New Zealand guys?
I think Rob Balakoon would have got in there as well if he wasn't injured, because he's another guy who was playing serious rugby until he got injured. So,
yeah.
We'll just have to see, lads. We'll have to roll on Wednesday and then Saturday, and it's going to be a good few weeks.
On Wednesday morning.
8 o'clock in the morning, lads. It's going to be a good one. But unfortunately, lads, that's all we have time for this week and for this season. So I want to thank all the guests that came on this year, and of course, huge thanks to all the producers and the crew in the back. Obviously, couldn't do this without you, and obviously the three messers. Obviously, you know, it's made my life a lot easier coming up on a early this morning now because of Darren. Poor old Darren made me get up at 6:30 this morning and drive up, but got here. But no, lads, it's been a good show. I've enjoyed it. I hope everyone else has enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's been a great season. Yeah, it's been good having you in, Darren. You've always brought a bit of energy into the show.
Ah, sure, you know yourself. Nothing better to do.
No, but I can't believe we've come to the end of the season. Like, we've had some amazing guests on. Yeah. Just my standout one is having Contopomi on. That was my favourite episode.
Oh yeah, cool. Yeah, nice one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was very room just went quiet and just kind of he's so interesting. Like what he was saying, he analyzes rugby in such a way that he lives and breathes it. And you're and this guy's also a bloody doctor as well. So he's such a clever man. But I think he'd be up there.
Is he your favourite guest?
No, Darren's my favourite guest. What am I saying? It's actually a joint toss of, we had Lindsay on as a guest at the start originally. So it's actually, they're my joint favourite guests.
In fairness, Lindsay had such an impact as a guest. She's now a presenter.
Thank you very much. Yeah. I'll take that.
No, it was a brilliant season, guys. Thanks very much. And of course, a big thank you to our partners, Bank of Ireland, proud supporters of the Four Irish Provinces. It's the last episode, guys. We'll see you next season. Thanks very much.
Joe presents House of Rugby, United Rugby Championship, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the Four Irish Provinces.